Welcome to another episode of the Bakari Sellers Podcast. Today, we got a really, really, really dope individual joining us today. None other than Chaz Sanders. What's happening, my brother? How are you?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing great. How are you? I can't believe this is our first time meeting.
I know. And it's virtual. I mean, next time we got to do it in person and get that energy. I like that.
Yeah, absolutely, man. But I just to give flowers real quickly. I don't know if people do this to you every time, but I've been knowing about you since I was probably a freshman in college, just by way of all the connective tissue people we have in common. And I called Quincy last week. I was like, so what's he like? I was like, is he cool? And Quincy said, yeah, he's hella cool. So that's an important stamp, man. Quincy's an important stamp.
I appreciate that. Yeah, he's been on here too. So look, we start each one of our shows in a very unique way by having our guests walk us through the arc of their careers. And while folks who know you know the writing and the creative work you do, your first job out of Morehouse was at Google. So talk about how we get from Google to Rap Shit and Direct Deposit. Walk us through that.
Yeah, sure. So as you mentioned, I went to Morehouse College down in Atlanta, and the first job opportunity I had came directly from a guy who I got close to in school. We were in the same frat. His name was Jason Crane. He had gone on to work at Google the year after his senior year, after he graduated. And Google was kind of just coming to HBCUs and like scooping up pockets of black kids that they thought were smart. Like I could tell they really didn't even have a particular point of view on what they would be great at, or where to slot them. But, you know, they would put us wherever they thought we fit in the business and then kind of see what happened from there. And that start for me at Google is important because, you know, a lot of my work has been a direct reaction and in some ways a direct revolt against like what corporate America felt like for me and what it did to me in some ways. So I worked at Google for a year in Mountain View out in the headquarters in California. I jumped over to the New York office, then I went over to London, came back to New York, and, you know, just to call it what it is, I just got tired of the corporate bullshit and I quit, went to a tech startup. That company got bought by Kaplan. Same thing. I really just couldn't feel comfortable answering to anybody. And so I left, you know, I left it all to be a starving artist in New York and try to find a way into Hollywood, entertainment, creative, whatever. Like, I really didn't know what I was moving toward, but I just had this feeling that I could, you know, be a writer, really is what I thought. And, you know, the sort of eureka moment or the thing that really opened up the world for me a lot was that I went and started writing this TV pilot at a coffee shop in Fort Greene called Baba Cool. And I've told this story a million times, so I'm going to try to make it sound more interesting this time. But just to call it what it is, I met Spike Lee sitting out front of that coffee shop because it's right across the street from his studio, 40 Acres and a Mule. And, you know, Spike was very welcoming to me, another Morehouse dude. Kind of took me under his wing, showed me a lot, had me sit right next to him in the editing bay on his projects and doing coloring for his movies and soundtrack and all that stuff. Took me out to Hollywood and just kind of was like, all right, you know, I'm going to take this project out with you. I had one TV pilot at the time, but he was kind of just like, dude, you're a writer, like, you know, go, like, ready, set, go. And, you know, to get to where it is today, my first job in a writer's room was on Grown-ish. I wrote for Rap Shit last year. I have, you know, my podcast Direct Deposit, which is on Audible, which is really the emotional chronicling of me, you know, chasing this industry and chasing money in this industry. And I wrote a book called Black Magic that came out a couple of years.
Pen to paper.
Yeah, I've just been writing. Yeah, I'm like, I'm trying to, how do I make it sound sexier? But like, I just be writing. That's it.
Talk about that. I mean, like, so you breezed through it a little bit, but like, you were just, were you intentionally sitting across from Spike Lee's studio? I mean, how did that happen? I mean, for me, it embodies Morehouse, right, which is, you know, you interact and cross paths with people, whether or not it's on campus or off campus, and it's the network. But I don't even know if it was a Morehouse thing or a talent thing. I mean, what was the genesis of that? Or maybe y'all just like the same type of macchiato.
No, he wasn't even sitting at the coffee shop. So there's a promenade like right outside of Baba Cool over there in Fort Greene. At the time, you know, I was fully unemployed, and I'm coming up on like my I think 7 or 8 year reunion of being unemployed, basically. But I had no connection to society between 9 and 5. So I would be at that coffee shop pretty much every day from, I'll call it like 11 to, you know, maybe 6 p.m. or whenever they closed. And I would just be sitting there with my laptop every single day writing a TV pilot. I had no training in TV writing, never had been to a class. I didn't go to film school. Like, I just Googled, how do you do this? And I think I probably started noticing him there, if I'm being honest, like a few days before I actually got the gall to go over and introduce myself. Maybe I had seen him out having coffee on that promenade once or twice. But this one day, I still don't know what it is. Like, I kind of think it's God. I just walked over and introduced myself, and I told him, I didn't even tell him I was writing a TV pilot. I just told him everything else about me. And he was nice, because I was a Morehouse guy. I think that's why he was open to it. And he gave me his email, and he was like, you know, hit me up, whatever. I thought it was a fake email. It's like spizike at.
Don't,
you know,
say it out loud. Yeah, because I have it.
The crazy thing is he changes his email like every 6 months, and I believe his phone number. But, you know, so. In some ways it was quite simple. It was profound, but it was simple. He was just like, you can write, you got a voice. I think you could probably, you know, hack it if you can be tough in this industry. And then he kind of just sent me on my way.
I mean, that's dope. Let's talk about direct deposit. What is it? Why did you start the show? And what have you learned about Black folks and wealth as a product of that show?
So what it is an 8-part audio series on Audible, which is, you know, a spoken word platform, more or less. I'll tell you what I went into it trying to create, and then I'll tell you what it became. So what I was going to do was I was going to do a show called New Money, and I was basically just going to do, each episode was going to be a conversation with me and a young person of color, somebody under 40, who had really just like struck gold and got rich. And I was going to talk to them about all the changes in their life and how it affected them. I was going to focus on, you know, people in technology, athletes, and entertainers. And over the 1.5 to 2 year process of developing the show, I personally was, I just came out of what were probably the, you know, definitely the most intense, emotionally painful, challenging 2 years of my life, these last 2 years. And those were also the 2 years that we were developing the show. And so what it started to become was more a show about my personal journey, trying to get it in this business, this very chaotic and ruthless, and in some ways it's undersold how intense this business is. That's what started to come out on the page and into the microphone as I started to build it out. And, you know, with some tutelage from, you know, our executive producer at Audible and the producers I worked with on the show, we then brought in the voices of people like Issa Rae and Gabrielle Union and Charles King and Quincy Avery and Pinky Cole to almost in some ways guide me, to help me get through it, you know, to help me get through the painful parts of being young and Black, being untethered to a corporation to buoy you, and having to kind of claw your way through, you know, while your life changes. So that's what the show is. It did become, you know, I think it really feels like watching a TV series through your ears in all ways, sonically.
Yeah. Audible's been great at that. I mean, even the Charlamagne, Kevin Hart Audible, yours is dope. The one they did on the Move bombing in Philadelphia. I mean, just, it's like you're listening to a movie, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I wanted to add one other thing, which is that I brought New Money when it was in its infancy to Sean Finnessy. And I pitched it to him before I knew what it was. You know, Sean Finnessy, obviously at The Ringer, the head of content where you're at. And most people didn't know what it was until, and this is, I'm saying it to say something about the creative process, which is like, usually I don't even know what the thing is until I'm halfway through it. And I feel like most people have that same experience.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
So what do you want people to get out of it, though? If you had to just pinpoint that one thing, what do you want people to get out of it? And how do we get Black folks, in particular, parents, et cetera, our generation who are now having kids, to be more comfortable talking about money with each other?
Well, the first answer is there's so much risk in if you are starting without wealth, there's so much risk in trying to create wealth.
No shit. And I'm just nervous every day. Every little private equity investment I make, from 25,000 to 100, if it goes down or you lose it, because you know you're supposed to only invest what you can lose. But if you lose it, you're like, fuck me.
Yeah. And you know, that I think that risk can take on different forms for different people in different careers, but regardless, there's risk. And risk comes with exhilaration, it comes with fear, it comes with, in some cases, there are people who are willing to take advantage of you while you're taking a risk. You know, there's this whole laundry list of, I guess, pitfalls within it. Yeah. And if you're Black, on top of that, like if you add the dimension of Blackness to it, then you're bringing in all of the litany of dangers that we know exist around Black people. And so I think, as you listen to the voices in the show, and as you listen to my voice, you will find that what it creates is really pushes you into like your most survival instinctive being. Like it really reduces you down to, can I just survive long enough until this risk pays off? And I want young Black people who are trying to do that thing to embrace that process, because there's kind of no way around it for us as far as I can see it. If there is, then somebody didn't teach me.
Like Black Magic, you're also an author. You mentioned that. I know how difficult that can be. What's it about? Why'd you write it? And what did you want readers to take out of it?
Man, Black Magic is, it is me. You know, I started that book in my mid late 20s. It's my first book. I got another one that I'm writing now. But it is me trying to answer the question for myself. Is there anything I'm getting out of this Black experience, which is so hard, you know, which is so challenging? Is there anything I'm getting here that I can use as tools for myself to get where I'm trying to go? And it takes, I think, in some ways, detached and analytical point of view on, you know, code switching. Well, what I'm doing here, I know what I'm doing is assimilating. I know what I'm doing is trying to get people to hear me and respect me and see me as equal, white people specifically. And that's bad. Like that sucks. But maybe there's something inside of code switching, something that I'm learning in terms of empathy or character building or the ability to use my voice that I can use to do what I'm really trying to do as Chad Sanders, which is, you know, at that point in time, it was to build a media company. So I take probably 10 different principles like code switching, and I look over the arc of a young Black person's life, and I try to pull out, like, what do we have here that are our tools to use? That's what I call Black Magic.
What did you learn about yourself when you were writing?
Well, it was my first book. So I mean, not to be facetious, but like I learned that I could write a book. Which is to say, I had to afford my life while also writing a book, which meant that I had to find ways to make money in the industry while going through the three or four year process of getting this book done and getting it published. When it was published, I learned how just making one thing with your name on it that is of substance can open up, you know, doors to everything else you want to do. And that was important for me to know, because I am a person who has a million, you know, thoughts and ideas running through my head at all times, as I think many of us are. Everything looks exciting sometimes. I want to chase everything down. But when I was able to just focus and lock in and get one thing executed, the rest of my life is now derivative of me taking care of that one thing.
Yeah, that process is like you learn more about yourself during that process than most people give them credit for when they're going into it. Talk to me about two of my favorite shows, Rap Shit and Grownish, and the creative process. How did you come up with the content that we end up seeing in these two shows? And what's it like working with Kenya Burris and Issa Rae?
Okay. Well, this moment right now is probably the freest I've ever felt. And so I'm going to challenge myself to be completely honest right now. So writing on a TV show, I did them in two different ways. For Grownish, I went in, wrote one episode, co-wrote one episode, and I left. I was in that writer's room for a week. So barely got to know the other writers. Can't say I got to know Kenya Burris at all. You know, I got to work with him for a week, but I have no relationship with him. Don't have his number, et cetera. The process of writing Rap Shit was completely different. I was with a team of, I want to say 12 writers over the course of, I want to say 20 weeks, maybe longer. And it was all through Zoom because this is like just post COVID, right? So there are people who wrote on that show who I didn't meet, you know, until months after we started writing the show. And writing for a TV, especially writing a story about two young people who are in the middle of their messy, chaotic, exciting mid-20s lives.
Yeah.
And this is a young room. It's like almost entirely Black. It's mostly women. It's just like a, you know, I'm going to be honest, like it was emotionally challenging. It was emotionally challenging because everybody is sharing their real life shit. Their real life stories of the stuff that they stepped in their 20s. And you're trying to be supportive and you're trying to glean all the best stories from that and put it into the creativity. While also, you know, if you're me, while also feeling like this is vulnerable. Like I feel at times probably a little bit judged, you know, at times probably a little bit afraid of how people are going to see me because I did this thing, because I did that thing. And what I'll say about Issa is watching Issa when I was on set for the show, when it was being produced, watching Issa walk around a set of HBO Max executives, actors, producers, directors, successful people, people who have made careers in this, people, yeah. Some people who are twice her age, watching her walk around and be the boss with such a calm and cool resolve and without making a show of herself in it, that turned a dial for me about what power can look like if you want it to, if you're not completely ego obsessed.
Along that same line, though, Chad, this is my last big question for you, but sure. You know, what do you tell young folks who are listening to this, who may have a TV show in mind and want to see their ideas end up on the screen, big or small, like you have? What's your advice for them? Because your story is a true, like, I was homeless in New York. Luck happened, skill happened, preparation for opportunity happened, all that shit we hear about.
Right. And I want to say, like, I definitely was never homeless, but I was broke there, you know, but man, what I would say about all of this, like,
you were one step away from starting the OnlyFans, showing your feet, Chad. That's what you were.
Bro, if OnlyFans had existed then, I definitely would have considered whatever somebody wanted to pay me to see. But man, my thing is, so I live in New York. I don't live in Hollywood. I've never lived in LA. I love LA. I strongly do not fuck with Hollywood. I would say if you want to make something, like, pull yourself away from the idea that somebody is going to see you and discover you and lift you up and put you in the right position and all that stuff. The Spike Lee of it all, like, that is not real. Like, that is not real. That is completely out of your control. You could spend 20 years waiting for that. If you have a vision for something you want to, I have a TV series that I want to make right now, right? I'm a screenwriter. I got agents. I got managers. I got all these connections now, blah, blah, blah. All this shit I didn't have 7 years ago. I'm making the TV series first. I'm writing it. I'm shooting it. I'm bringing on producers that I like. I'm pulling teams together. Like, when I didn't have those connections, when I wanted to make my show with, you know, that eventually got sold to my first show that I sold, I went and shot a scene of it, you know, for a couple $1,000 that I pulled together. Got a Morehouse brother, Stefan Bristol, who directed me in it. Cast people that I know, like. That's what I believe in. I believe in, if you want to make it, start making it. Like, yeah. don't even, sorry, I'm yelling into this mic, but like, I just believe it so strongly. If you go wait in line for Hollywood, if you go have to pray to Hollywood as your God, like, you're going to be punished and you're never going to get the shit that you want. And you're going to be waiting for gatekeepers forever who don't want to let you in the gate.
That's real advice. Chad Sanders, it's been a pleasure, man. Tell people how they can follow you and what you got coming up next.
It's been a pleasure. Likewise too, man. Thank you so much for having me, Bakari.
Especially for young, there's a lot of people who listen, who are younger, who want to get involved. So hopefully they find at least one, find some motivation out of your story.
I love that. And honestly, like, I reply to DMs. So, you know, I'm not too fancy to be hit up. On Instagram, I'm at Chad Sand. On Twitter, I'm at Chad_Sand. And I literally just started my TikTok. So let me figure out what my fucking, what my little joint is.
Man, I had TikTok for like a week. I was trying to follow my daughter on TikTok and I was just like,
oh, Lord,
she gonna be out there doing what she want to do because daddy can't keep up.
Nah, hell no. I'm at Chad_Sanders on TikTok. I'm gonna say that shit again. Hopefully you guys can get an edit. I'm at Chad Sand on Instagram. I'm at Chad_Sand on Twitter. I'm at Chad_Sanders on TikTok. And you can listen to Direct Deposit on Audible now. You can listen to Quitters, which is me and Julie Bowen, who you know as the blonde mom on Modern Family, on anywhere where you get podcasts. Black Magic's the book. And to answer your question, I'm working on a TV series right now, which is mashing up basically what's actually happening in my life right now with some surrealism and some funky ways of telling a story. You'll see that very, very soon. I'm showing the process of building it out on my TikTok. So that's what's going on.
Chad Sanders, much love. Thank you for joining the Bakari Sellers podcast, my brother.
Bakari, thank you very much, man. I appreciate you. All right.